Knock, knock, guess who is knocking at your door? That's right, you know it's the morning for sure. Might be a geography, it could be. Maybe it's men around me. You know you love this week in Mormons, original Mormon news. If you love Lindsey Sterling, Bryce Harper, Cello salad foods. Oh, you're gonna love this.
Hi everybody, welcome to This Week in Mormons. We're grateful that you took the time to be here with us this week as we spend more time with you talking about things. I always feel weird when I travel because I can't hear myself on this microphone. It's very frustrating. Anyway.
Oh, Jeff, you poor man.
My life is really, really hard. There's no wizarding spell to make this work better in my favor, unfortunately. I looked it up. They didn't have one yesterday. Anyway, but thanks for being here, folks. We're glad to be here this week. There's certainly a lot of important things to cover in light of what's happened since we last recorded.
We have a panel this week. We've assembled a panel for your enjoyment.
Oh, and because some people said, they don't know which one is which on the show. So I'm Jeff, by the way, okay?
And I am Jeff.
There we go. We're perfect.
No, obviously I'm Alan. I sound manly and sophisticated. That's how you can tell it's me.
So
also with us.
Yes.
Yeah, also with us, we have a good friend of the show, Steve Westover. Hello, Steve.
Hello, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us, Steve. And we have leading LDS's very own Kurt Frankham. Kurt, of course, has done Sunday School Bonanza with us 4 years, but I think, Kurt, this is your first This Week in Mormons appearance.
Yo, yes it is. I'm privileged. It's like I've watched The Tonight Show growing up and I'm finally on the couch. This is a magical experience, guys. I even brought some soup.
That's the best description of being
you
on
guys,
this show I've
ever
heard.
Brought some soup just in case Al starts eating, I can start eating.
Oh my goodness!
We'll slurp it together.
This is
poetry.
Now, so to frame stuff today, a big part we wanted to get more perspectives than just mine and Al's on everything that's gone on with
about
the handbook changes.
Oh, I'm just kidding, guys.
and I also think there's some benefit here. We have all served in different callings, and hopefully that might inform our understandings of things. I mean, Kurt, you've been a bishop. You're currently in the stake presidency. Steve, I believe you have been a bishop. No, recently
yep,
released.
Correct.
Because of the handbook, if I'm not certain, if I'm not mistaken. That's what Al said.
Released about 6 months ago.
And Al's on the High Council. I'm an Elders Quorum president. To be clear, we're not, you know,
none of that matters.
Speaking.
I'm not sure why we're going through that.
But I'm only saying that because of that, you might have had leadership experiences that could help inform your view on the stuff that we're discussing. That's so obviously we're not speaking for the church or anything.
I don't think leadership would frame the view on this stuff almost at all. Do you? I don't feel like that.
Well, if you had experience with handbooky items, I think it could.
All right.
Yeah,
and
I
so
think
it
I would
is,
agree
yeah.
with Jeff that there's some instances.
Well, Kurt, you have a podcast called Leadership in the LDS.
I know, it's sort of my shtick, right?
Of course you agree with
Jeff. I'm just saying that there's instances, I think, as we get into this, where as I heard the news, I definitely reacted differently than because of some experience in situations I've been in. I mean, again, not that that makes my opinion or perspective superior, but yeah, it was definitely different.
I'm most excited about Steve's point of view because he writes about dystopian young adult fiction. And what would this mean from that perspective? That's what I'm most interested in. The divergent world sort of thing. What is happening there with all of this?
Clearly the world is ending, Al. We can see that. And if you're ever on Facebook, we can definitely see that and read that every day, ever since last Thursday night.
Oh, my gosh. You've gotten more comments on your posts than anybody I've ever met. That's why you're here. You're Facebook famous right now.
Oh, of course. Facebook famous. That's super, super famous.
That's pretty good, yeah.
Steve, are you going to be selling the rights to your YA series? I mean, The Hunger Games is going away now. No more movies. It's over in a couple weeks. So.
Sure, Jeff. You want to buy it?
I would love to. I'm well connected in Hollywood, of course, and I would be more than happy to buy it.
I'm sure Al would be happy to jump in on that too.
Tell me, if your net worth is negative, does that enable you financial liquidity? I'm curious.
Well, no. So Steve actually does write. It's not like LDS. You don't write LDS fiction, right? It's like
Levin
fiction
Thumps.
From an LDS author.
He writes Levin Thumps.
Dude, I write everything. I've written LDS fiction. I've written middle grade fantasy, and I've written the dystopian. And then, of course, I do the I write a little fun murder mystery, a short story in a magazine.
Yeah.
Well, there's nothing like some fun murder. My mom, I bet my mom would love it. You should actually plug it because my mom is a murder mystery diehard.
Jeff, you copy edit his murder mystery.
I do?
Yeah, it's in the back of Block.
I don't remember that.
I'm glad it's memorable, Jeff.
Every issue except the first.
When has there been a murder mystery in the quilting magazine?
Oh, it's always been there. It's there.
It's the Jenny Dunn.
I don't think they let
mystery.
Me touch that one. Is that too creative for me? I just do all the quilting articles.
Perhaps Steve's work is already refined enough. It doesn't need your touch.
Then again, Al, you did an entire employee manual and didn't even ask for my editing expertise. So, you know, a lot's going on that I'm not aware of, apparently.
Well, we're excited that you made it with us, Jeff. Even though you were down at the Harry Potter Wizarding World this week.
Heck yes, I was. Oh, my gosh.
His first time. You had the Butterbeer, yes, for $5?
Yeah, Butterbeer was okay.
What do you want from Butterbeer?
I don't know. It was kind of what I expected, but I'm neither a major cream soda or butterscotch fan, so it was fine. It was fine, but it was really sugary. I mean, that was like diabetic overload.
I should have known better than to try and please you with an entire world dedicated to your favorite things.
Oh, I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was amazing. It was very good. But we can talk about that more in depth. I'm in Orlando right now. It's not really a lovely place. Orlando's kind of terrible, but it's still lovely to be here. Lovely to be here. I am at the Rosen Shingle Creek in Orlando. It is very much a conference hotel, and anyone who does conferences knows what that means.
And walk us through your themed hotel room.
I wish it were. I believe the theme of this room is 90s, and...
And not clean.
And things my grandma likes. I believe that is the theme of this room. So anyway, well, whatever.
All right. Well, let's jump in. So we actually had a lot of people that have expressed a curiosity or desire to get some other points of view on the happenings this week.
Yeah.
The oft referred to as Black Sunday. I don't. Maybe we can make that a thing. I don't know.
Black Thursday. Black Thursday would be more appropriate. Yeah. I mean, that's what.
But so in case you missed it, in case you haven't been on Facebook, let us catch you up briefly. the church changed some policy in its Handbook 1. The policy change was actually. I mean, the thing that was most interesting to me right out the gate. Was that it is now official policy. They've changed the criteria of being an apostate. They didn't change the criteria. They added two other things that would delegate you an apostate member of the church. One of those is being in a same-gender marriage, and the other is formally joining another church and advocating its teachings.
Well, I think they've always had joining another church in there, but the advocating part, I think, is the addition, if I'm not mistaken.
Now that in itself, I feel like was pretty weighty change, right? I mean the church has done a lot in these last couple of weeks to sort of mend. I feel like they've been really trying to mend relationships with the gay and lesbian community. They've been making gestures that are very positive and supportive, and to have that come out, I mean that was sort of a big pill to swallow in its own right. That didn't get the headlines though. What got the headlines it got a little.
You are introducing this very poorly. Let me take over, Jeff, go ahead. Let me do better.
As you will, please.
So there were a few distinct changes to the handbook. The ones we just talked about involving apostasy, and the other one dealing with it's a new section actually in Handbook 1, section 16.13. It used to stop at 16.12, so now they've added a whole part all about children of a parent. Living in a same gender relationship. There are many ways to interpret this, and that is part of what all of the hubbub and rancor has been on the internet, right? I don't know, should we read it verbatim? Would it behoove us
Give us a summary. What's the summary?
Well, the main summary is that a child, presumably, to speak in broad terms, a child of a parent living in a same gender relationship may not receive a name and a blessing, Also, that child may be baptized, but with a much broader array of stipulations, in that they have to have a mission president or stake president. It says may request approval from the Office of the First Presidency to baptize, confirm, ordain, or recommend for missionary service this person, only if they have accepted and committed to live the teachings and doctrine of the church, and specifically disavow the practice of same gender cohabitation and marriage. And two, is of legal age and does not live with a parent who has lived, interesting, or currently lives in a same gender cohabitation relationship or marriage. So those are the two main stipulations: disavowal, and you have to be of legal age.
So let's start here. Kurt and Steve, I'd love to get you guys, one of you guys, to sort of lead out. If you are from the point of view of the church,
which we don't speak
what,
for.
What are they trying to accomplish here? What are they trying to accomplish?
If you were speaking for the church, what would you say? Yeah, that makes sense.
Well, no, but like, you put yourself in the mindset of writing this out, and we heard the sort of the contextual interview with Elder Christofferson. Like, what's the mindset here? What are they trying to achieve? What were they thinking? What were they thinking? As we can best
Kurt,
suppose.
Tell us what went on in the temple that
oh,
day.
Oh, sure.
That's
well,
what we want to know.
wish I could tell you. Well, not really, but.
I just want to start. Come at it from the point of view of the church.
So my thoughts on it, like, one of my initial reactions was, the first thing I heard was the baby blessing part. Obviously, that's the first portion of that, those paragraphs. Yeah. And as, you know, going back to my time as bishops, if a gay couple came to me and they had a child, you know, a legal child, regardless of where that child came from, and they wanted to bless that child, it's like, okay, well, you know, sure, like, let's do that. But then the more you think about it, when the clerk has to go in the clerk's office and create that record, what parents do we put on that record, right? Like, what are the parents' names? And then, so just from an administrative point of view, it gets really sticky, and there has to be some guidance there. And even a bishop that my brother's aware of had this exact situation where a gay couple mm-hmm. came to them and wanted to do that, and he was sort of didn't know what to do. So obviously there was definitely some clarification and guidance needed for local leaders to fall back on, so that they weren't just sort of guessing on that. And so, obviously, that's one of the points that, you know, people are talking about on the Facebooks, is that, oh, well, you know, this is out of the love of these families, and, you know, we have to we don't want to create any dissonance there in the family, right? So
I think it's interesting, though, but most of the time you were bishop was before, what, June of this year, you know, before the Supreme Court ruled in favor of gay marriage, for the most part.
Yeah, sure. I was released 2 months ago, yeah.
Yeah, so I wonder how much it's changed with that. I feel sure. like the churches, at least some of the approach we've had, it's really seemed like, from a lot of the brethren, the tone has kind of softened a lot, and by no means do I ever expect the church to out and just like accept gay marriage. That's going to change. Anyone who I think it's foolish to think that's going to happen. And there are different tiers of people who support gay rights within the church. There are those who want gay couples to be able to be sealed in the temple and the whole thing. And there are others who view more about the, you know, the political situation, civil rights and such, while still recognizing that marriage, as far as God is concerned, is between a man and a woman. And that's that.
Right, but these policy changes were pretty shocking coming out right now. There really hadn't been any kind of clue that a major change was coming. And as Elder Christofferson said in his interview with Brother Otterson, is that, you know, one of the things they were trying to do with this is signal to the church that things are not changing regarding the church's position on same-sex marriage. Now, yeah, I don't know that anyone really thought it was. So this is a fairly strong message. I don't think anyone's confusing it.
Yeah, well, it's funny because I think like rewind 2 months 2 months ago, and over the last couple of months, there was a definite softening of the stance towards gay members of the church or gay and lesbian individuals in general, because I mean, you put yourself in their shoes, and they're like, I have good friends from college that that are are lesbian and married and still like dedicated to going to church each week. They believe in the church. They had come to a reasonable sort of balance where they were like, all right, you know, the church, like the sort of cultural shift right now is we're accepting, we're loving. You can find good wards where that's sort of the overarching theme, which should be every ward, I'd think. And they felt like they had a place there, and it was sort of a, yeah, and you could just sort of, the church wasn't saying that that you can't do this or that it was particularly bad, because up till now the law had been able to determine all that, and here the church was sort of having to say no, just in case you thought that all that was fine, because they weren't saying anything, but it did feel a little bit out of the blue. It felt like, yeah. I mean, just a normal Thursday, and there were a flurry of headlines.
And Jeff, you asked the question, what was the church trying to get at? And I think that's part of the confusion. Even though Elder Christofferson kind of tried to clarify that, he didn't really clarify a whole lot. And so it's a little difficult to understand what they were really hoping to accomplish. In some ways, it sounds like they thought they were looking at this policy in very small kind of circumstances. You know, in other words, if a child lives with a gay father and mother, in this case, they would not be able to be baptized, blessed, ordained, etc. But there are just so many other situations where children live within a divorced family, mom lives with another woman, dad takes the boy to church every Sunday, and he's 11 years old, getting ready to be ordained a deacon. And now, according to the language, reading it precisely as it's written, that boy cannot be ordained, even though he's active, involved, even though his father's active and involved, and even if his gay mother is supportive and okays it. So it comes off feeling very persecutory. Sounds a little bit harsh, but it feels like the children are being persecuted or attacked or judged for their parents' actions.
Surely if you were that child, that's how that would feel, right? Like I think from a grown-up's perspective, I was mentioning before the show, I went through an exercise this last year of writing a policy manual, an employee handbook for my employees. Yeah. And I'm on like revision 9 already. I'm 1 year in and already, you know, like they get in, they're like, perfect. Here's my loopholes. Here's how we're going to move around this. Here's the, you know, and they've misunderstood this thing and this thing. And I'm just like, my gosh, this is hard to get the language just right. So it represents what you're trying to do. So I have a little bit of empathy from that, except that these guys are like, you know, almost Supreme Court judges and like very, I mean, these are smart dudes that are sifting through this.
I would expect they've got their attorneys looking at it as well.
What's that?
I would expect they've got their attorneys looking at it as well.
Oh, of course. I mean, yeah, now but, we get most revelation comes via, after being looked over by lawyers and then published in the newsroom a lot of the time.
Do you think that the Brethren realized sort of the fallout that this would bring, or do you think this was a surprise
It's conjecture. I think it's important to back up and emphasize how this was released, right? Because that's everybody can agree that this is a shocking change in the handbook, and it impacts individuals in different ways. But you know, it did come out through a leaked situation. Now, you know, that doesn't say that the church was innocent in the communicating of that, because from as far as I understand, what they did is they just updated the handbook 1, and then you know, a rogue bishop or somebody, a leader who had access to that, leaked it to the powers that be in the media, and it went from there. And so I think that, you know, it's easy to say that, you know, there is a better reception or delivery that they could have done, but it was sort of out of their control early on, which is a mistake of probably many people. And that's kind of
the church
emphasized the shock.
I feel like the church doesn't care about branding so much. Like this,
really?
This, you know, the way that this came out
I think
is
it's
one
all
of those
about
things
branding.
That,
Yeah, the church cares immensely about branding. I've read a lot of the internal documents at Boncom, for example. The church has stuff at length.
Well, no, they care about logos and stuff. But like,
logos. They care that being Mormon is a lifestyle brand. They use this language to discuss how we share the message of the gospel and even how we talk about things, whether it's gay marriage, whether it's adoptive rights, whether it's the rights of children to be baptized at age 8 or later. All of this factors into the overall brand of what it means to be a Mormon, and the church, they care immensely.
Why would there be no press release around this? Why would there be no attempt to sort of roll this out in a way that people understood?
That was the plan, right? And they didn't have time to.
Was it?
I think as time goes on, we'll realize that there was much more of a plan.
You make the change to the handbook, publish it,
and that's, I think, was a mistake that probably won't see happen again, but. But I think
Otterson lost his job that night.
If the church would have had their way as far as the releasing of this, we would have seen, you know, you think of resources like MormonsandGays.org that, you know, they try and give as much information, interviews, roundtables, and to really explain and bring context to this, where it just quickly got out of hand. And so they were just being reactive rather than proactive.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think they expected this to come out quickly at all. You know, they put it in a handbook that very limited number of people have access to. And when that got leaked, yeah, they've been trying to play catch up ever since. You know, it is interesting, though, since we mentioned the leak, that there's another leak tonight just stating that there is going to be some kind of clarification going out. I just saw this on Facebook. Let me just read it real quick, because we all know Facebook is always true. But I think it's coming through John DeLynn again. But it says, brethren, the following short statement was sent out by the Presidency of the 70 today related to the recent changes to Handbook of Instructions. There will be additional clarification on these changes from the First Presidency and Quorum of the 12 in coming days. We are invited to help people with questions, not jump to unwarranted conclusions or interpretations, and remain calm while we wait for clarification. So I think they are still trying to play catch up a week later, but I'm very heartened to see that maybe they're looking at this again. Maybe they're looking at it with some fresh eyes and some new considerations, and we'll just have to wait and see if and when those changes come out.
That makes me wonder, though. I mean, yeah, they could look at it with fresh eyes and think about things or what they're doing. But I feel like we do take very deliberate action, typically at the highest levels in our church. So I feel like they've weighed it a lot before they'd bother to put it in the handbook. I mean, we can talk all day whether or not they could have predicted the reactions of everybody and this and that. So I will be interested to see, Steve, like what they actually, if they have more clarification to offer, what that could be. And if that's the case, why didn't they seize upon the opportunity with Elder Christofferson to be really clear? Because I thought Elder Christofferson's little, you know, kind of his sit down with Otterson, which was kind of, you know, a very friendly environment. I think it clarified a few things for me. It still left a lot of things unanswered, at least for me personally.
And again, for me, that comes down to, I think they were looking at it in a very narrow way and not really maybe thinking about all the repercussions and how large and how many people this would affect in you know, different custody situations, you know, the dad who had a relationship before he repented, got married, sealed in the temple, and now their children born in the covenant can't be baptized. Again, you know, reading it exactly as it's written, that would be the situation. And what that's I'm true. Hoping is they're looking at that and thinking, oh, that's really not what we intended. Let's maybe tighten up the sloppy language just a little bit and clarify and limit this effect a little bit.
This could be a case of, like, you know, the punctuation of this in the Second Amendment, that same kind of thing, right? Where if they could mess around with the syntax a little bit, maybe that would not ruffle so many feathers, but we don't know. Cause I agree with you as it reads right now. That's one of the most interesting ones. What if someone was previously in a gay relationship, left that, repented, all that stuff, right? Disavowed it themselves and was happily, you know, in the gospel and doing that. And yet that child does not have the option, at least not until, you know, he or she is 18, which is interesting to me.
Well, I wonder if the the intent of this, like what they would want the outcomes, and they just being those who wrote the policy, do you want the outcomes to be that maybe a gay man or woman stays in a heterosexual marriage in order to not bring some of these questions to his youth? I mean, is it like what is the right scenario for this to play out if you're currently going through some of these situations? And so far as the policy of that was written goes, I mean, what's their expectation, I wonder?
Yeah, and I guess I wouldn't think they're trying to necessarily influence specific situations of, people in a heterosexual marriage that is deciding whether to make this change in his life, but mainly just being clear as far as
wouldn't it though? Wouldn't that, like, if you were trying to decide and you're like, I'm going to jack my kid's whole church upbringing if I do this, I feel like that would play a huge
part. Well, and I think that brings up another valid point is, I by far want to recognize the hurt that this is causing many individuals, and just because it's coming from prophets, seers, and revelators doesn't mean that it doesn't hurt, right? But nonetheless, as individuals in all aspects of life take stands for what they think is true, it sometimes hurt individuals. Where in a personal situation of mine, I had a very close family member who came out as gay and decided to live that lifestyle, and it broke up his family, and I mean, there were numerous people in my family that were hurt because of his stance of what he thought was true, right? And so, and more power to him for it, and we love him and all that, but it's just kind of the other side of the coin now is that a church is now taking a stance for what they think is true, and yeah, it's causing hurt and it's making situations sticky, but nonetheless, each group or organization has a right to state what they believe is true.
Right, and this really sad thing about this is, in a lot of these families, like the situation you just said, Kurt, a lot of these families, they're already hurting. They're maybe suffering through a divorce or custody issues because the mixed orientation marriage wouldn't work. Those kinds of things, and now this almost adds another layer of that hurt onto it.
Yeah.
And so I think it's pretty reasonable for people to have the visceral reaction, the confusion, the hurt, the pain, and that's what we see coming out in all these posts and the rumors or the thoughts we hear from everyone talking, a lot of people talking about actually resigning their membership. I think of the Jana Reese article that she put out yesterday where the young man wasn't able to be ordained.
Oh, yeah,
and it's so sad because in that household, you've got a active father and mother, you've got this boy who wanted to be ordained, you have younger children, and their position is, well, we can't have part of our family fully active and engaged in the church, fully accepted, so we may have to find someplace else to go. So that's an entire family that could be leaving the church because of this.
Yeah,
and that's such a sad thing.
Right, and I guess my point to recognize is that, yeah, the choices of a church making this policy change does impact that, but also that's not the only choice that did it. It was the choices of individuals as well decided to make this choice or change in their life that, secular society applauds, which is fine, but it's not just the church's choice that's causing that. It's a bundle of choices.
That might be a bit of a bigger issue too, because I think the church has distanced itself a little bit from the rhetoric that being gay or lesbian is a choice. They've distanced themselves a little bit from that doctrine.
Yeah, and I'm definitely not saying that these people are choosing to be gay, but they're definitely choosing how to reconcile the gospel of Jesus Christ as it's stated by prophets, seers, and revelators, and how to reconcile that with their life and their feelings and how they are.
Yeah. Well, that's the struggle here, though, is that as we sort of change our understanding about that. That's where I think we can go back to the people that were hoping that the church was changing its stance a little bit on how it dealt with gays and homosexuals. Was that rhetoric has changed? That sort of overarching, just choose to be straight if you want to be good. Sort of
which won't work, right?
Yeah. Chitter chatter is gone, and so now like with the evolving position there, I think there was a lot of optimism that, that something else might come, and now this this has sort of sealed that up, said no, that's not going to happen, just in case you were wondering.
Which I think that was, yeah, I think it's very silly. I don't know. I never was optimistic or anything. The church was getting so soft.
I wasn't either. I wish that one line came out alone, though, and let us digest that for a couple of weeks before the rest of this, though. I feel like that would have helped
me.
That
would have been nice.
I think it'd be nice.
What's been hard for me here is I think.
Go ahead, Steve.
I just think it'd be nice, and this was my hope, because I did see that things were softening a little bit, at least to the point where we could express that, yes, we love you. Yes, we want you to attend with us. Come be a part of us. You know, we have Elder Christofferson's brother, who articles have been written about, how he attends with his partner in his ward. And so you kind of get this idea that, hey, you know, maybe we can get together and we can worship together and love each other. And this feels more like a situation where they're saying no, because it doesn't fit our brand, because that's not what our definition of family is. We don't necessarily want you to be here with your arm around your partner in sacrament meeting. And for that matter, we may not want your child there on the records of the church, where we'll send home teachers or those kinds of things.
Yes and no on some fronts, I guess. I think no one's saying that no one's like welcome to attend, because even Elder Christofferson's brother is not a member. You know, he attends now as a sort of de facto ward member, but he's not on the roster of the church or anything like that. And obviously now he's not going to be, given, you know, his current situation.
Right.
It's going to be a very special Thanksgiving this year at the Greater Christofferson compound.
They're welcome to attend, but a new class of citizen is being created here in the church.
In a way, that's what I've worried about. It's almost like we're like instituting a caste system in a way, because I mean, going back to the kids, which I think is what's harder for most people with this, at least it is for me, because like formally categorizing gay marriage as an automatic definition of apostasy, I think is harsh in a way, but understandable with, I think, the way some things go. But with what's going on with the kids, I think that's just so much harder to digest for people. Because if you were to take, and you've seen this all over the internet, right? I'm not saying anything new. You take Kid A and Kid B. Kid A, from a family with like drug addicted whatever parents, let's say they're both a 15-year-old boy, right? Drug addicted, messed up parents, finds the gospel, makes friends, finds a sense of place. His parents don't care if he joins the church. He has their blessing as much as that can be. He joins the church. He goes on to live a good life in the church as a new branch, a new little branch of faith in the great tree of the saints, right? But Kid B could be from a very similar situation or from very supportive parents, or like we've said before, living with his mom. Let's say his mom, parents are divorced, dad is now in a homosexual relationship involving cohabitation, living elsewhere, and that kid can't get baptized by these definitions right here. And I think that's what's so just troubling for people. And like, that does kind of create levels.
So that kid will not grow up in his formative years with the gift of the Holy Ghost. Right.
Holy Ghost. And I can't help.
What
but
teenager
wonder, like,
does not need
I can't
the gift
help
of the Holy
how
Ghost?
Many kids are gonna... Exactly. And what kid is going to want to stick around? Like if you find the church and you think it's a cool thing and you want to join it, but they say, guess what? You can't get baptized. Because remember when your dad left your mom for a guy?
To bring an alternative point of view, there's a lot of people that do stick around. A lot of people that can't get baptized because mom said no, and they attend faithfully and wait patiently and do get baptized.
That's
but
true.
That's a little
true.
Different.
But a lot
though.
Of that's because mom said no.
Right, mom said no. Not the church said no.
This isn't the church saying no. This isn't the church saying no, even if your parents say yes.
Well, but I'm
that's the difference.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that the idea of waiting for those gifts is not unheard of, right?
Agreed. Yeah. Agreed.
There is also a piece of this that I think if you have like the normalization of gay and homosexual relationships inside the church, I think is also a concern, because if Jimmy at age 7 is what I worry about is that maybe there's an effort to avoid having these conversations in primary or normalizing some of this inside the ranks of young adults, and you know, like sort of fearing that if they were allowed to come in and be full members of the church at that stage, that maybe, you know, it softens that outlook on other gay and homosexual relationships by other members of the church.
Yeah.
Does that strike true to anybody? Like, do you see any of that?
I don't know. I mean, I get what you're saying there, yes and no. I mean, the only main explanation we've seen so far for a lot of it is it protects. It doesn't, like, disrupt the families, what they're saying. It protects the kids.
Has never been a concern in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
I know. It's like, how many times have we been totally fine with trying the faith of somebody and saying, who cares? Join the church. It's great. But for whatever reason, we've decided that, you know, in this
they got
case,
kicked out of the house because their mom didn't like it, and on they went.
And I understand it's fundamentally different.
And we applaud them.
It's fundamentally different, right? Like, sure, you might, like I said before, this kid might get baptized and come from a bad heterosexual family and whatever. And there are going to be hurdles there. It's going to be tough. But maybe it is because it's so fundamentally different, because that kid would go to a church that is saying, guess what? Same-sex marriages are apostate, and then he goes home to mom and dad, who are like, hey, we love you. And I could understand there being plenty of confusion there for a minor. It still doesn't mean it sits comfortably with me as the full rationale for it, but I understand how that could definitely happen.
Yeah.
Sure.
The other thing that's strange about this, though, at least to me, and it goes back to the designation of apostasy if you're in a same-sex marriage, but you could have a kid whose father is gay and goes out to the bar and meets different people every weekend, is not cohabitating, is not
that's true.
married, and that's not apostasy. And that kid is not restricted from getting baptized today or being blessed. And so it feels strange to me, or I'm confused by it. Why the difference? Why would it be better not to be in a committed relationship?
That's a good question, because instead of having, you could have a gay parent who's promiscuous, but you can get.
Is there any way of classifying that? Well, because like I mean, on the other hand, we're fine with gay members of the church, right? Like when I've lived many places I've home taught gay guys in my quorum, and they came to church every week and took the sacrament, and the rules with them was the same: just don't have sex and keep doing you. And I mean, it was the same for heterosexuals or gays alike, right? And so where do you, I mean, where else could you draw that distinction, I wonder? Which I agree with you it's pretty crummy to endorse the one and slight the other. But I wonder where else could you draw that distinction of, like, if you are...
I don't know, if you said someone is living the gay lifestyle, that would, and having, you know, having gay sex, that would draw a line that would be equal both between, and I'm not advocating that, by the way, but that would at least be consistent between those who are same-sex married and those who are just going out and meeting new people.
Yeah, and I would add that, you know, in these handbook changes, like Christofferson said, I don't remember his words verbatim, but that discipline would be needed, right? But it's not necessarily the outcome. But in all those situations you've talked about,
right,
it would still be up to priesthood keys that would determine that. And we talk about, you know, saying no to people to receive baptism or ordinances, and that's sort of been a lot of the talk is like, how can you turn people away from the gospel? But every week a bishop or stake president is acting under his keys and telling people no all the time. And that's, I mean, this is just look at it as a 35,000 foot view, this is simply an act of priesthood keys determining what ordinances are available to who. And that's really the role of priesthood keys, is to direct the ordinances of the church. And I, you know, people are getting the no answer all the time. We just don't see it in publicly or in handbooks.
But Kurt, isn't this in a way taking that away from the local priesthood keys and moving it back to the first presidency?
Right.
Because it really removes some of the options for the local leaders and saying, no, this is mandatory, or if you want an exception at 18, you need to get approval from the first presidency. So really, they don't have that authority anymore, whereas before they could have, you know, used their best judgment and the spirit.
I do wonder about some parts of this, though, like when it talks about referrals to the first presidency. I mean, it says a mission president or stake president may request approval from the office of the stake presidency. Admittedly, to me, that's fuzzy what may implies there. Does that mean they must, or does that mean they may if the situation is not clear to them? Yeah. That's one part where I feel like that one little verb right there isn't completely, you know, clear.
I read that as if they deem it's a worthy cause, that in that case they would then send it back to the first presidency.
Yeah, so in other words, they're still the first gatekeeper. Plenty of places, because there are other parts in the handbook where it's very clear where it says things that are a must, like when we talk about whether a disciplinary council is mandatory or whether it may be necessary, for example. So that's I don't know. I don't have clarity on that. I agree with you guys as far as the initial reaction that it seems like that's what it is, but I can't help but wonder if that's actually more open-ended or not. I thought it's interesting, though, that we do talk about how disciplinary councils, you know, we don't know what the outcome is going to be, which is what Elder Christofferson said, which is fair, but I also have a hard time with that when it comes to same-gender marriage being a mandatory disciplinary council, because unlike stuff with, like, say, Kate Kelly and John DeLynn, you know, people of note, where it's apostasy is, you know, deliberate opposition to the church, stuff that is a little more subjective in sense. When it comes to gay marriage, I mean, they're basically either you're legally gay married or you're not, right? So if you're legally gay married, what other assessment is there in this situation other than you are in apostasy? Forgive me if I'm missing something here, but I just feel like you're in a same gender marriage. That meets the criteria. This isn't a matter of interpretation or anything. It's just...
I think they're drawing a distinction that an act is a deliberate act has been, you know, an official act, a signing of a marriage certificate has taken place, just like, you know, for other items of apostasy, a deliberate act has taken place, and therefore, discipline must come.
And that's
except
what of course
this also includes cohabitation.
Yeah, cohabitation
in which case you don't have that.
Yeah, so it's like Kurt said. Then it's very clearly, if you take it to that next step and sign on the dotted line to make it official, that's when you have crossed the river Styx, so to speak, I guess.
Or if you just move in with someone. So you don't really need to sign on the dotted line because cohabitation is also apostasy.
Well, isn't that yes and no? Because it says, because on 6.7.2, isn't that where it says that's qualified more under serious transgression, where it says especially sexual cohabitation is what was added for where it may be necessary? Isn't it only automatic when it's in a same gender marriage? So that doesn't that apply being official?
So some of the responses too, I thought it was interesting because there were sort of two different camps of responding to this online, right? There's one camp that was the church can do no wrong, and if you believe in the church, you will get on board. And then the other side was, I mean, particularly among people that are sort of that are like trying to stay with the church here. And then the other piece of it was it's policy, and policy is not gospel, right? Policy is the church's manifestation of, you know, how they're distilling this down into the organization of the church, and we're fine to disagree on that, and we're fine to hope for change on that. Are there any thoughts on those two sort of responses, and maybe advice for one side or the other, or guidance?
To me, that's the most interesting part of this whole scenario, we can sit and talk about what they were thinking, what went on in the meetings, why they're approaching it this way, and it's sort of fun to talk about that, but we all know that we'll never get to a solution where we're like, we figured it out, right? But the interesting part is that the cognitive dissonance that's happened even among people who've never experienced this before. And oftentimes when I served as bishop and someone would come in with a, you know, pretty serious, you know, doubt that they, or new information, whether it was in church history that they're struggling with, and now they're sort of reevaluating their faith, I would sometimes surprise them by just congratulating them that they're actually thinking about their faith now. They're actually evaluating where their testimony is, where a lot of people just kind of get mixed up in the culture of things and show up to church just because that's what everybody else does. And so I don't think this can sort of be a blessing to some individuals that haven't experienced this sometime, and now you can really have something to pray about, something to seek for. And it makes me evaluate, you know, this wasn't, obviously it came as a shock to me, but it wasn't that I was like secretly thinking, man, are these really prophets, seers, and revelators? But I know that there's people out there thinking that. But it makes me evaluate, how do I form my core beliefs? Because a lot of people have two core beliefs, one believing in same-sex marriage and also a belief of believing in prophets, seers, and revelators. And now these two have just crashed into each other and they don't know how to put the pieces back together. And so what would it be in your life? What direction would come to the from the church that would shake you, right? And how would you react? And I think it creates more empathy for these, as we look at these people that are experiencing this. We can't just say, oh, come on, get on board, you know, these are prophets, get with the program. Everybody has a core belief that could be challenged and probably will be challenged at some point. And so it's good to step back now and think, how am I going to approach that in my life when I have to put the pieces back together? And why aren't I experiencing more of that? Because it allows me to pray and seek further guidance and gain a deeper witness of what this gospel is and who these prophets are and if that makes sense.
Right. And like you said, Al, good points, Kurt. There really were a couple of camps, and it's interesting that there's such a dividing line and such defensiveness. I can't even tell you how many private messages I've had from people because of my Facebook posts claiming that I believe that this is an erroneous policy. People calling or writing me and telling me that I'm apostasy for that. And just a lot of anger about that. And I just don't see it that way. In fact, you know, when I think we see something that we view as wrong and it goes against our conscience, and the Spirit prompts us that something is wrong here, I think it's our duty to say something. And I look at it more in the view of being loyal opposition. You know, loyal opposition is an important principle in government and business. We need people that can help us see around the corner or see something that is in our blind spot. And I think this was in the church's blind spot. And so I think that this media frenzy, this tsunami of people reacting to this, I think this is maybe making the brethren take another look at this. And if we do see some adjustments to that, I think it will be because there was an outcry. And so I think the loyal opposition is a valid way to look at this and viewing it as a duty to kindly, gently disagree if we think it's in the best interest, not only of the church as an institution, but also for the church as the people.
Well, I actually think that's really fair, Steve, because the church has never been made up of yes men. You know, it's not an organization full of guys that nod their heads and do what they're told. We are from the very get-go invited to pray and seek our own witness. And what do you do if you pray and you get a different witness? You are able to come in and have a conversation about it. And there's as time has gone on, the church has gotten more and more comfortable we've all prayed and got the same witness here, right? Good. But there are people at varying stages of progression varying stages of understanding along some of those lines. And I think there's absolutely nothing wrong with being in the fray with everybody else, but still saying you know I don't agree with this, and great, that's fine. We both know the gospel's true. Perfect. We're going to go and try and make this church that is the manifestation of the gospel, and not the other way around. We're going to try and help make that the truest manifestation of the gospel that we can, and that's done by us, for us on this level of maybe just saying, hey, this is something that we should revisit, or I can't wait for us to revisit this doctrine. I actually am really excited for when blacks can get the priesthood,
I was just saying though, remember those things aren't doctrine though. That's a very key thing to remember, distinguish between policies and doctrines in the church. While policy may be driven by doctrine, even this is not a doctrinal change. This is reinforcing parts of our doctrine. Yeah. But it's a policy change, and policies can also change at another point in time, right? Anything could, you know, we don't know. And I like, Al, what you were saying there, how you know, the assumption that people make that everyone's a yes man sometimes, but that's not the case. And I like that a lot of the apostles have said that. For all we know, this was like 12, 15 angry men or something. For all we know, this was like a 14-1 situation for months until one person came around and they finally kind of passed it with unanimity. But we don't know. We have no idea what the discussions were.
Quentin L. Cook, he was the only one holding out.
No, for sure. I choose to believe. No, I don't know. I don't know. I don't have a joke there. I don't have a joke.
And it is interesting that whether people are responding online supporting the church, or whether they're online voicing loyal opposition to the policy, in both cases, I think it's because we love the church. It's because we're trying to help the church grow,
yeah,
and maybe avoid a landmine or two and help to strengthen it. So I think on both sides, we just have to be super careful not to judge others' motives or intentions.
Yeah, and I'll add that that's the thing that's concerned me the most is I do want people to know that, you know, especially as I stand in my leadership capacity in the church, I want people to feel like, you know, if you're struggling with this, that's okay. Like, if you are having some cognitive dissonance, that's okay. But what concerns me is all the political or secular or religious footballs that are being spiked on Facebook on both sides that, you know, that are causing people not to feel okay in wherever they're at. And I think they'll realize that once all the dust settles, the church will be stronger because of this, and the individuals will be as well.
I loved your previous point, Kurt. Just like, what if everybody's response to, hey, I have a doubt and I'm not sure about all this, was awesome. Did you know the church was founded on an answer to a question? You've got questions. Exactly. Way to go. Let's get in there. We should, like, it's such a change in culture to be a welcoming of questions sort of organization, because we've left so much of that. And maybe there's a big turning back to some of that that needs to happen, where in gospel doctrine and in elders' quorums across the church, people are all of a sudden okay with differing points of view and trying to understand and raising concerns and questions instead of saying, quit disrupting the lesson. We all sit here and play Tetris and get out of here.
Yeah, so, and that would be my number one message. If there's somebody listening to this that is really going through a
tough time. There's no one listening to this.
But let's imagine there were. And they're really going through
it's the four of us and then two more people.
And I think some people feel like, okay, I've got to prep my Facebook post and really take a stand here on either side. But my message to them would just be slow down and give us some time. Allow the church to prove to you that they still are prophets, seers, and revelators, and they can add some clarification, and this will turn out okay. Just don't feel like you have to run to Facebook and spout your opinion, thinking that you know, now's the time I have to take a stand. Like, just be patient with it.
And related to that, I've been so concerned seeing that it seems like, heck, we're a blog and a podcast too, right? But so many are jumping on this for the sake of trying to get page views, right? I've seen some of the prominent ones publishing every day with the usual, you know, yellow journalism headlines.
This is a Greg Trimble comment.
This isn't just a Greg Trimble comment, but I'll call out Greg Trimble. Sure, I think Greg Trimble is doing more dangerous work than perhaps he realizes. But that's not just him. There are plenty of people doing that.
I think I myself,
Al, you and I had some like heavy discussions when this broke, right? And I even learned lessons in this that I need to be more patient with even what we publish on our own page sometimes, because there's stuff to weigh and there's stuff to figure out. And even this has been a valuable lesson in that for me. I don't think we did anything inherently wrong, and I think we try to be pretty measured. But even so, that desire to be like so in the mix, make sure you're heard, make sure you're one of the ones driving the conversation, can be so overpowering that we take away the ability to have sensible, positive discussion about things. And instead it just becomes all about, you know, making headlines on Facebook, which is like, so what does that do for our salvation? Jack, right? So who cares?
So I'm curious, like we're winding towards the tail end here, but if, you know, for people that have concerns or like, let's say you're best friends with a kid that has two gay parents, that's all of a sudden in the middle of this conversation without any desire to be in the middle of this conversation. Any thoughts or words that might go far with those situations or those individuals? Be it people that are struggling like deeply with this as a policy change, or people that are in these situations.
I think just being there for them and expressing your love really, really goes a long ways. And recognizing that when you think of the church and what it is, you know, there are different ways you can look at it. You can look at it as the leadership. You can look at it as the institution. But really, if we look at it as our brothers and sisters, the membership, then we as a church can be supportive of those individuals, even if a particular policy maybe isn't.
Yeah. When I wonder, Steve, have you ever felt drawn to change your opinions when somebody calls you an apostate in a private Facebook message? Does that ever help? When maybe somebody out there is posting something and somebody's feeling like they need to call them an apostate or tell them they are wrong?
Generally, I will say no. However, I will say that I had over the weekend I posted a meme that I thought was pretty funny, but I had someone get on and say, this is really offensive to me. And out of respect for that person, even though I thought it was super funny, I went ahead and deleted it. You know, I took it down. So I, you know, in that case, it was a reminder that I needed to relax a little bit and calm down and be a little more aware of how what I do or say could affect other people. So I think in rare instances, it can cause self-awareness.
Yeah.
Yeah. I still had a couple.
Kurt. Oh, I'm sorry. Kurt, any thoughts from you on, I think we all can agree. We've probably had more heavy discussions on this topic with people that at like 2 a.m. I can't believe this is happening. You know, talk me through this. Help me out here. Like what are some of the things that come to your mind as you sort of guide these discussions?
Yeah, I think it's just like Steve said, with just being there for individuals. And it makes me, I've thought about the phrase a lot this week. I interviewed on my podcast at leadinglds.com. Go visit now. I interviewed a group of past bishops and state presidency members who experience same gender attraction and who are gay. And one thing that was said on that episode is that many gay people feel like it's easier to find sex in a park than it is to find a hug in church. And so regardless of what the final handbook direction is, like, we need to think about that and say, how can we, even with this direction, still reach out to that community, that group, and say, hey, you know what? You're still welcome to join us. You're still welcome to think different. We just want you to know we're still here. And if you can find a place to worship God in our building, you know, come join us and we'll figure out the stickiness.
Before we go.
Sorry, Al.
No, what's your problem, no. Al?
Nothing. Sorry, the lag, net lag.
Are you okay? You feel good?
Yeah.
One thing I was curious about, I know we're winding down. I saw a very interesting post, just thinking about this in an international context. Basically, someone was questioning why we care about this now, and Elder Christofferson even cited the U.S. Supreme Court, you know, ruling as it did for gay marriage and how this drove the current policy. But gay marriage has been legal in other countries for years now. And this person said it's probably about total church membership of roughly 2.5 million people living in other countries where gay marriage is legal. And like, so it is an interesting question. Like, why was nothing done about it before then? Like, because this is a global policy. This isn't just for U.S. saints or anything like that. And I don't know if we have an answer or if this just goes back to the old, you know, the U.S. exportation of American stuff abroad. But I do think that's very, very interesting that it's like, okay, well, if this is an important moral thing, and it is, and we're trying to look out for children and for their well-being, why have kids in, you know, Argentina since like 2010 still been getting baptized with gay parents? And maybe it could be just because it takes a long time to sort these things out. Maybe, you know, maybe the Supreme Court ruling was just kind of the straw that broke the camel's back. Right.
Yeah, I certainly don't think there's any ill intent there. I just think I just think they recognize it because it's local. It's in their face. You know, it's something they're reading in the newspaper. And you know, when we look at who the brethren are, you know, the vast majority of them are, you know, United States, Utah people. So so I think that's going to have a deeper impact on them. And I think actually it does maybe show a little bit of a blind spot for them, something that they could be aware of, because I do hear that quite a bit.
Yeah, I just think it's, you know, and this goes back to a very different topic of, you know, just internationalization of the church and everything. But I think that's, I felt the same frustrations with, like, Prop 8 and stuff like that. The same kind of thing with where it's the moral fight we're doing, but we also seem to be focusing it on areas where there was political viability for it to succeed, as opposed to, like, Minnesota doing it after the fact, but we didn't care. We just had a letter from the pulpit because we knew a traditional marriage bill in Minnesota wasn't going to go anywhere. But that's a whole other topic for another time, and that's okay. But but that is something that troubles me in that sense, because if these are the moral issues that I believe they are and we care about them, why don't we take kind of a blanket approach on moral issues? Because God's laws are irrespective of political affiliation or country origin or anything like that, right?
No, that's not true. Obviously, God is Swedish, and he rules from a kingdom of Scandinavia.
How dare you?
So as it affects him,
he is Danish, Al. Now that I know I'm more Danish than I am Welsh, I have to claim my Danish side. So he's Danish.
All right, well, you guys, this was actually great. This was really fun to sift through some of this. So thank you for all of the different views, the opinions. I know it's been sort of a crazy week of Facebook posts and articles galore that we've been sort of sifting through. And so I hope that that as you our audience listens through on this stuff, that this was helpful and sort of clear and distinct instead of the general ramblings of some Matt Walsh-esque Mormons.
It's not even just that, but I would say, if anything, like a lot of, and you guys, you know, Steve and Kurt, thanks a lot for your insights. I think the great takeaway from all of this that should be in any situation is just be open and help people work through stuff. Because the worst thing we can do is just make someone who's at odds with this or struggles with it feel like, no, you can't say that. What's wrong with you, heretic? Get out of here. Like, it's so counterproductive. Okay. Make yourself a positive force who can help people feel they can talk about stuff.
Yeah, a phone call probably will never go further than this week to somebody that's struggling with some of this.
Yeah, so, I'm sure we all have our flocks, and we're like, I've got people in my quorum I'm worried about over this. I got people in my ward I'm worried about, and I imagine all of you in your different positions are in the same boat. You know, we got to look out for everybody.
All right, well, let's go ahead and wrap up. Kurt, where can people find you? Where can they follow you if they want to?
Go visit leadinglds.com. I'm on Facebook and such, and you know, Twitter, and if you want to follow me there. But yeah, I mean, we tackle all things leadership as related to the church, and we'd love to add your voice to that. So,
Steve, what about you? Where can we come find you if we want to engage and buy your wares?
Hey, Amazon, just type in Steve Westover, you'll find me. And also Missouri Star Quilt Company. We've got my wife and I have an adorable little children's book that just came out. And a picture book, and you know, talking about how children are our treasure. So,
beyond
take a look
measure,
at that.
A treasure.
I have read and endorsed A Nothing Named Silas by Steve Westover on Amazon, so you can all go read that. and then for us, obviously, you can email us contact@thisweekinmormons.com.
Whoa, Al, what about where you can find me,
Jeff?
You can find me in Orlando for about the next 3 days. After that, my whereabouts shall remain a mystery. That's all.
He'll be back in D.C.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Back that's, in that's his apartment. Sure. Yeah. Okay. contact@thisweekinmormons.com. Go to thisweekinmormons.com and leave a comment. We'd love to hear your
Join
thoughts.
Us on the social space if any of you are new, because our Facebook wall has been busier over the past week than it normally is. But to join us on there, good discussion. I really do appreciate the variety of comments we get on there, especially over stuff like this.
There is a dramatic variety.
Sometimes it
of
devolves
comments.
Into ad hominem attacks, but let's try to avoid that and have good discussions on there. That'd be ideal, folks. That'd be ideal. So yeah, those are all good things. Once again, I would like to thank Steve and Kurt. Thank you guys for joining. It's the nicest of you to take the time to do it.
Thanks for having us.
Glad to be
Appreciate
here.
Appreciate it.
Absolutely a pleasure to have you. Al, I hope you be well, senor.
What was your sign? Be well, be happy, and
be well. I forgot it now. You
all right, yeah,
so
yeah.
Much,
no,
I
will. Thanks, Jeff.
Yeah, all right.
See
all
you
right,
guys.
Folks, this has been another wonderful issue, yeah, sure, episode of This Week in Mormons. Thanks for taking the time to tune in. We hope you have a great week. Hang in there and be happy. Seriously, be happy. All right.